Okay, welcome everybody to the first post-match review episode of Forever Bristol City podcast 23-24 season. I'm delighted to be joined by Mark Tovey and Ian Gay, and I think Neil says he's can hear us now. So Neil Sutton, hopefully you can join in as well, Neil. I'm going to get everybody talking about the positives from yesterday. Ian, for you, the positives. I know that's going to come hard, but tell us about the positives.
The positives for me were Rob Dickey and Zach Viner. George Tanner did okay. The rest of the side didn't. Max O'Leary was all right. But we struggled badly against Preston and should have lost the games. But those are the only absolute positives that I can find from the 90 minutes.
Okay. Mark, you're always able to put a good positive turn on things. What are your reflections, having thought about it overnight?
I think overnight it's made me calm down a bit. I thought Zach Viner was outstanding. His ability to step in and read the situation, you know, calmness in the tackle, stepping up the pitch, cutting out passing to their front man was brilliant. Rob Dickey was very good as well, and I think he probably played within himself. He probably wanted to get further forward into the midfield, but it was just too congested. I thought Sam Bell did okay when he got on the ball, gave us good options up the left, but I thought we were tactically naive. We had no intensity, and it was a very flat and disappointing performance. We deserve to lose. We were lucky to get a point.
We deserve to lose. That's strong words. Neil, assuming you've got sound, yeah, I'm asking everybody for positives. What were the positives from your perspective?
Can I check that you can hear me, Dave?
Yeah, we got you perfectly. Brilliant. Yeah.
Fantastic. Pretty much the only, well, other than the ones that have already been described by Ian and Mark, the only positive for me is we didn't lose the game, really.
Yeah.
And it's the type of game that Pearson alludes to, that if you're not going to play well, make sure you don't lose. So that, to me, realistically, we didn't play well, and we'll go through why we didn't play well, other than a couple of individuals, but we didn't lose the game. Yeah, and it's all about 40, it's a 46-game season.
No, you're right. If you want to take a positive spin on it, that's only one defeat in the last 10 years on the opening day fixture, but that's three in a row that we haven't won. Preston went into this with no wins on the opening day for 5 years, and they can consider themselves unlucky. I'll be honest, look, I didn't watch the game live. I watched it on Robin's TV because I'm just winding down the final day of my holiday over in Cyprus. But I have to say, it was a performance that was so, so familiar to the type of performance we've been seeing at Ashton Gate, I'll say, since the heady days of 2017-18 season. You know, not pretty to watch. Decent crowd, 23,500. It wasn't a full house because Preston only bought 1,200, and that's why there was lots of seats in the Atio. I noticed quite a few empty seats in the south stand as well. So whether that was people on holiday who hadn't worked out how to forward their season tickets, I don't really know. That said, I managed to forward my season ticket to a friend, and reading between the lines, it looks like there weren't any problems with the digital ticketing. But we'll talk about some of the off-the-field stuff later on. Ian, I'll come to you first. It's all about starting lineups. The team, in certain areas, picks itself. But what did you think when you saw that lineup announced at 2 o'clock?
Yeah, well, I wasn't surprised. Once Scott's out, Vyman's a natural replacement if we're going to play that, the formation with two tens, so a 4-1-2-3. The fact that he went off with a reoccurrence of the same injury he had in pre-season is poor. And at that point, we'd lost six players out of the first team to injury. So you can't do much different. The only thing you can do is change the formation. And that's what I do for Millwall next week, having a look at that performance. And hopefully Scott will be back for that, from what Pearson said. But I never put money on any pronouncements on injuries, because we've got a terrible record of saying someone's not far away. 10 weeks later, we still haven't seen him. So I don't think there was much else you could do with that team yesterday. And I was quite hopeful when I saw it. But
well, all the pre-season euphoria, plenty of goals against, by and large, pretty inferior opposition. Preston's pre-season had been mixed, but I think they tested themselves more than we had looking at some of the fixtures. Yeah. That Mark, Ian said no real surprises with the lineup. I guess you can perm any three from six, though, when it comes to the forward department, yes?
Yeah, I think the problem is... for Pearson, I think he likes to play Harry Cornick. He's now had a pre-season. Was he going to exceed expectations on his performance from last season? And the other problem is shoehorning Andy Vyman, who's a number 10, into a wide midfield position behind the front three or 1-2. I think Ian said it's an antic before, you know, to coin one of Ian's phrases, an antic, not a tactic. And he wasn't fit anyway.
But it was his birthday and he is club captain.
I mean, football can be a bit sentimental, but I mean, it just doesn't work. I think he was asked at the presser on Thursday what his best position was. It's number 10. He just looks so out of place. He can play wide. He can play wide in a 4-3, or he could play down the middle. Stick him there. You're just shoehorn, trying to fit him into a side, and that's a bit of a mess. Maybe an extra midfielder would be better, but we didn't have one. Cal Naismith injured, Alex Scott injured. Then you're looking at Andy King, who hasn't got. I don't think he's got the stamina to last the whole game. Otherwise, I would have had maybe Tommy Conway for Harry Cornick, but none of those players can hold on to the ball with their back to goal, and that was evident throughout the game. None of them can do that. There's nobody like Semenyo who's strong enough to break the lines or take their ball with a back to goal and, you know, bring other players into play. Unless we pass the ball quicker, which we didn't, then you get a problem.
Yeah. Neil, sort of consistent views from Mark and Ian. What were your thoughts? I mean, Harry Cornick ahead of Sykes for one. What were your thoughts about that?
Well, I think we've got a way of playing that we play on the fast break. We're sort of, you know, top four for fast breaks. We need teams to come on to us. When teams sit back and denies the space behind, and they say, right, yeah, fill your boots. Come on now, what have you got? We are generally useless. That's why, in a lot of ways, we're a better away team than we are at home. We can't impress it. Yesterday, Dave, I sent you that thing up 30 minutes, didn't I?
Yeah, you did.
Where there was actually no shots on target for any side, no corners for any side, nothing for anything. We just watched half an hour of nothingness.
Yeah.
Now, Preston, at the start of last season, what did they have, about 6-0-0s or something, didn't they?
Yeah,
they
scored one goal. 7-0-0s to start the season.
They didn't concede a goal for their first seven games. Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy.
So you know that they are going to be solid. They're going to be saying, right, okay, break us down. And we couldn't. But then they weren't adventurous in any shape or form in the first half. It took us scoring at the start of the second half for them to come out of their shells and actually have a go at us, yeah, which we'll come to, obviously.
Yeah.
But team-wise, I looked at it and I thought, well, that is basically the team of last season, isn't it? I mean, night for Scott and Dickie for Callas.
Or Dickie for another
that was playing left centre-back at the end of last season. Otherwise, nothing's really changed, has it? And the way we were playing, nothing had really changed. The last 2-3 months of the season, yeah, we were good. January to March, we were good. Last 3 months of the season, we weren't great, Dave.
Well, no, we lost.
You know, we didn't finish.
We lost two of the last. No, 10.
Yeah, we didn't finish on a flourish at all.
No.
So I'm not quite sure why we thought, or people thought, when I saw the team, why we thought that team was going to perform any differently to the team that finished the end of last season.
But it scored 26 goals in pre-season friendlies with very few behind. So, you know, that's where all the euphoria came from, you know.
Yeah, but I went on
one of those matches was us playing against half of our under-21 side. But look,
yeah, but I went to Cheltenham, Dave, and that was a competitive game.
Yeah.
And, you know, honestly, you know, we didn't have the wherewithal there to break down.
There we go. What is
a League One side.
Well, there we go. All right. Let's look at the first half. And I want a great deal to talk about, as Neil said, nothing. Ian, and all three of you, I'll ask you both, all three of you, on the two incidents in the first half that I've got. Ian, talk about both, and then, as I say, the same from Mark and Neil. Was that a penalty when Naki was brought down? And then after Naki had set up Sam Bell, should he have tucked that one away to give us an interval lead? You first, Ian, on those 2 points.
Don't know, and yes.
I'd like to enlarge upon that.
Well, I'd need to watch the, you know, I watched the game without the benefit of replays. I haven't watched it back. I suppose like anything else, possibly. The one with Sam Bell, I would have liked to have seen Sam chop inside from his left foot to his right foot. I have seen that one back on Sky, and the keeper got very close to him. So the keeper did well. He came out, we say narrow the angle, smothered him really. So hopefully what Sam should have done was chop back onto his stronger foot and try to take the ball inside, inside the keeper and finish on his right. But he didn't do that. So coming back to Sam Bell, I mean, Sam would be a dangerous player if he had some service. The issue for me, and I'll just get this in because I wrote it down. Our local paper said midfield seemed to be a bit of an issue. So I replied and said, lack of control, physicality, passing, pace, creativity and shooting. Poor positional play. They were completely square and zero service to our forwards. So yes, some issues.
All right. Mark, that's, those two incidents.
That's what was wrong with it. But on those two, yeah.
Yeah. Mark, I had the benefit of watching it on Robin's TV with Rob Atkinson. He missed the goal, funnily enough, because he was just come out of the gents' toilet with the... No, he had. He said, I've just come out of the toilet from with the Mickey Bell. They're talking about Sam's miss at the end of the half. Yeah, but that apart, I mean, that penalty, well, what I was trying to say was I saw all the replays live and Rob Atkinson said he'd have been very annoyed if that penalty had been given against him. Have you seen it over? And should
I,
Sam
no, I read his comment. I think he ran across Wales.
Yeah.
With VAR, you look at the amount of contact. There was contact onto Wells. Is it enough for him to cause a penalty? The referee would have to review it. You get a lot away with a lot in the Championship, as we'll allude to when we come on to the other Viner incident. With Sam Bell, Woodman's got a very good position and he does the splits. So he makes it very hard, makes himself very big. He's almost on top of Bell. So neither thing for Bell to do to get maximum impact. He has to chop back onto his right. There are defenders closing the goal. So he'd need very quick feet, but that was all he could do. There weren't any other forwards in play. No. So it's not like he can play the ball back.
What I thought. You've both said that. Look, if he'd been able to get it onto his right foot, because I thought if he'd have got it onto his right foot, as I saw it, he dragged it wide, although the keeper did well to spread himself. But if he got it on his right foot, he might have got a stronger shot away and he might have just kept in at the keeper's near post if he started to move left. How did you see those two incidents, Neil? The non-penalty and the non-goal?
No, I don't think it was a penalty, first of all. The ref, who no doubt will come to as well, let a hell of a lot go during the game. A hell of a lot. There were tackles going in from behind that he wasn't even calling as free kicks, let alone bookings. There were some... Yeah, I think he only booked one player in the entire team. Yeah. In the entire game or something like that. As for the Bell chance, the only shot in the first half for either side. My feeling when it came about, obviously it came about from a Preston mistake, one of those rare occasions where we actually effectively put a bit of a press on and they miss hit a pass back. When he crossed it, my immediate thought was it was slightly under hit. He didn't zip it across with a bit of pace. So it was just slightly or ever so marginally across. So Bell was running through and I thought the pace on the ball was just a little bit slow, giving Woodman the chance to actually come out and cover it. If he'd have zipped it across a little bit quicker, I think Woodman might have been in a bit of a worse position than what he was actually in.
That said,
I think a quality forward, no disrespect to Bell, might have looked to dink it over him rather than actually pass
it. Interesting you make the point about the ball not zipping across. Somebody put this on a thread on OTIB, that the grass seemed to be a little, it's a new playing surface, the grass seemed to be a little bit longer and it wasn't sticking, you know, a number of passes were falling short. Do you think that was an example of that, Neil?
Yeah, there were a number of passes in the first half. James was culpable for this in a couple of times where there were a number of under-hit passes. But then I think part of our play in that first half, well, I don't want to get ahead of myself, David, because we're just talking about the two things, but we're trying to hit balls into those front threes when they've got big, solid units behind them.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're playing against a back three, the spaces are behind the fullbacks and the wing-backs, and we never really hit those spaces for Bell to go in. Why we're not hitting the ball over the top for Bell to run onto, because that's his strength, rather than expecting him to come short and do some sort of link-up. I can't quite see it with Sam.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, look, we had half-time, and then right at the start of the second half, we got the goal, and Harry Cornick, who somebody I think unfairly described as never mind controlling the ball, he has difficulty controlling his body. All three forwards were involved in the goal. Ian, take us through it as you saw it. Yeah, it was good goal.
It was scrappy, but all goals are good goals, and there's never a bad time to score one. Cornick long throw. Bounced around in the penalty area. I think Dickie got a touch on it, somebody else. A shot by Wells hit the post. Came back, Sam Bell, Johnny on the spot, tucks it away with his right foot. Wasn't an easy finish, but he's put it away into the bottom corner for only our second shot on target in the whole of the 90 minutes. So yeah. Well done, Sam.
Yeah. Good goal from your perspective. As Ian said, any goal for us is a good goal. Naki got his shot away well, came back, tap in, but it came to Sam quickly, didn't it? Yeah, so as Ian said, did well.
Oh, you're talking to me, Dave?
I am, Mark, yeah.
Yeah, I think defender headed it out to Wells. He followed it well, hit the post and came across the box, and there was Sam Bell to put it in the back of the net. But yeah, only two shots on target. That was only the second shot. We didn't have another shot on target in the whole game. That he was on the spot, and that was the point where he thought we'd go on and try and get a second, but it wasn't, as we'll talk about in a minute.
Neil, the goal, I mean, can you imagine Nigel giving them a talking to at half time so that they came out spurred for action? And you know, Cornick, yeah, I'm going to say, well, he does a decent throw, but we had Zach Viner could throw it in that fast or that far in days gone by. So is this Cornick? Is this what? And this thing with Cornick, right? Let's not have a Cornick bashing session, but obviously it sounds like me starting it. This thing with Cornick, it was, let's get a pre-season into him. And when he knows the Ashton Gate, well, the HPC way of training players to be super fit and extra brilliant, right? They're going to be great. I remember the same thing being said about Casey Palmer, and that was £4 million that went down the drain. But fair play to Harry Cornick. He does a mean throw, doesn't he?
I thought a difference at that throw actually was Dickie, giving us the physical presence up there, a big old unit. He took out three of their defenders, and as I say, the ball dropped to Naki. My overwhelming feeling from E32 in the Dolman was it was a hell of a save by Freddie Woodman to tip it onto the post. I think the keeper actually got fingers to it to tip it onto the post.
Do you?
But a composed finish, yeah, hell of a save if it was. Mm. And composed finish by Bell.
Yeah.
But yeah, we didn't kick on, did we? I think Preston then turned around and went, stuff it, we're going to go for it now.
Well, that was it. Ian, Preston, that goal seemed to spur them because, as you said to me before we went live recording, you know, they had enough chances after that to win the game comfortably, didn't they? Yeah, before we come on to their equaliser later. But what went wrong after the goal? Did we sit back? Did they up their game, a combination of the two?
they up their game and we couldn't compete because we're not fit enough, we're not strong enough. It was, you only had to look at the two lineups. Every time I say it, I mean, okay, you'd have two players who would have probably been in the side, who I'm looking at and thinking if they're anything like they should be in the side in the base of the midfield, and that's McCrory and Tanner. Now, Pearson said he's going to play McCrory right back. I think he'd be wasted there. Play him where the Aberdeen fans say he's best, hold him midfield, play Naismith next to him if you're going to play two, and you've got two blokes who are 6 foot plus, I think McCrory's 6'2", that have got some physicality and can win the ball in the air. I thought Joe Williams did well from a defensive standpoint when he came on, some headers from set pieces, clearing headers.
Yeah.
But they looked taller, stronger, fitter. And that lack of physicality, Knight couldn't get into the game at all. Didn't look anything like the player Derby fans described. I don't think playing 10 is his best position. I think he's an 8. And whoever we play, assuming that McCrory and Naismith aren't back at Millwall, then we need to play 3 narrow across midfield to be able to compete.
Let's talk about Millwall in a minute.
We can't afford, what I'm trying to say is from yesterday, we can't afford the luxury of a 10. I mean, our midfield yesterday had nothing.
Ian, how many years have we been saying the midfield is a problem? And that was even with Alex Scott playing most of last season. You know, no creativity, no goals. I wrote down, I was making a few notes watching the game, but I said, there's no link.
Well, the first thing you've got to do is keep the ball. You know, people were criticising bringing Tanner for not getting up in support. We never had the ball in the second half. And every time we had it, we kicked it away.
Yeah.
In the second half, I can't remember us stringing 3 or 4 passes together.
Well, we viewed the ball as a hot potato. Mark, Ian said there about physicality. Again, picking up on a comment somebody put on OTIB. They had a 5'9" bloke up front, and when the ball was played to him, it stuck.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't happen with us, did it?
No.
And we're playing these long balls, and as Ian's just said, we've not got the players to they don't have the physicality, but that number 9 of theirs did, or whoever it was that person was referring to.
Yeah, they didn't have a it wasn't the actual number 9. I mean, they had Frokjær Jensen, didn't they? Their new signing, playing behind Will Keane. He's not exactly the most mobile player. You know, because he played for Wigan last season and didn't do much. But what they had was a midfield 5 that suffocated our passing. They sat in low in the first half, and it was almost like they were feeling us out. Well, not that there was much to see, and decided to push up. And Adam Brown was especially effective, and Ryan Ledson in the second half, and they were just strolling through our midfield, and we really needed an extra body in there. Joe Williams,
that's a disadvantage. That's a disadvantage of playing this.
Yeah, the thing you can't do is you can't expect a midfield to perform if you're going to have 2 key players out all of the time. I think we could have maybe gone to a 3 and pushed an extra body in there. We could have pushed Sykes in there as a wing back and add Pring as a left wing back. But a couple of the things I noticed, Joe Williams came on, looked robust. When he tried to bring the ball forward, he burst for a couple of tackles, probably one too many, and always looked like he'd losing control of the ball. Yeah. He was always going to ground, and the move would break up, and Preston would get the ball. The other thing is, Cam Pring had this trick last season where if he couldn't go outside a defender, he'd push inside. Did that yesterday. There's about 3 players in front of him. Obviously, people had done their homework, and he had to go backwards. So he wasn't getting any room. But in the first half, especially, we just played with no width whatsoever. You could see there was no option to play the ball wide.
And Cornick's playing out wide, but he's allegedly the nearest thing that we've got to a big man up front. Yeah.
He can press, but he cannot hold on to the ball. And I mean, he played, I think when he, for Luton last season, I think he had some injury issues, which is why he didn't get into the team. But when he was fit again, he was completely out of contention. And when you compared him with Luton's forwards in the game at Kenilworth Road last season, you could see how far away he was from playing for them. They looked far stronger and fitter. And again yesterday, but the real problem was that we were, the forwards are just so isolated because of because Preston didn't allow us to play. Knight was always on the periphery. He looked like he was chasing shadows.
You're talking about Preston here, yeah?
Yeah.
But there we go. Neil, rather than dwell on those matters there, I want to talk to you about a couple of incidents in the second half. I don't know whether you've had a chance to see it on replay, but Zach Viner did a tremendous block. But having seen it a couple of times live when I was watching it, the replay, it almost looked like a goalkeeper going down on the ball. Have you seen that one and are able to comment or not?
Yeah, no, I remember that one. That was there was a ball over the top and it was a bouncing ball and it was for Dickie. And it was the one real sort of mistake by Dickie in it, but he got doubled up. So they doubled up on Dickie on the bouncing ball, and then obviously we lost possession in the box, and then he drove inside, and we thought, here we go, shot in, and Zach literally threw himself on the floor, almost Thomas Callas like, really, in the way that Thomas would actually throw himself, and had the most blocked shots, didn't he, in the Championship at times. Fantastic block.
VAR, I mean, he was fantastic. Do you think VAR might have given that? Or as a pen?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. No, okay, not so. I mean, what I'll say yesterday, Dave, I won't dwell on it, but what Alex Scott yesterday, one of the stats from last year with him, I know we, you know, complained about his lack of productivity, lack of assists and lack of goals and all the rest of it. But what he is very good at is bringing a tempo to the side.
Yeah.
Bringing a tempo to the side, and he assists the assister. I know that's probably a stat.
I think there's a new stat called GC, goal contribution, isn't it? Or something like that.
Is there? He assists the assister. He gets us going in midfield.
Yeah.
He comes deep. He gets the ball. He drives us forward. We had no one yesterday that was actually trying to get hold of the ball and drive us forward.
We don't have a leader. We don't have a leader on the pitch. I mean, I don't think.
But it's not so much. It's not so much a leader, I don't think, Dave. It's somebody who can pick the ball up deep and run and go with the ball. And what Pring did, and obviously Mark alluded to it. Now, Pring, for me, if I remember at the start of last season, his fitness wasn't great. I think he takes a while to get his fitness up and running again. Yeah. But they just doubled up on him in midfield. And about three times he lost it, the ball in midfield, and then they broke on us.
Yeah.
And on some occasions they had three against two.
Yes.
Because Tanner had gone forward on the right.
Yeah.
He drove into midfield, lost the ball. He's on the halfway line, and they're breaking three against two or four against three on us.
And that losing the ball in midfield, dare I say it? I mean, Pearson can be a praiser of players, but he can also be a critic. He criticised Pring when he did that in the away game at Preston, if not last season. I think it was the season before when he broke and lost the ball high up the pitch. But you're right. I mean, I think Ian said not one of Pring's better game. In fact, I think Ian said, didn't you, Ian? Probably the worst you've seen Pring play. But was he allowed to? And you've got to give a bit of credit to Preston, because was he the one? Was he on the side? Was that 17-year-old Best?
No, that's on the. He was on the other side with Tanner. He had Brad Potts. He had Brad Potts, who's really, a unit.
The pair of them, they were more physical. You know, they just seemed. I know they were having cramp, and everybody was all, look at them, they've got cramp, they can't be as fit as we are. But, you know, I think they were running harder during the game than we did. Come to each of you, but sticking with you, Neil. Max O'Leary in goal, a couple of decent saves I put, but then came out, poor punch. Is he number one goalkeeper without question in your book? He's not got any competition, has he?
Well, if you're saying, is he the number one keeper at the club at the moment? And yes, he is.
Yeah.
But there's very little competition, isn't there? I think distribution-wise, I made the point on OTIB about his distribution at Cheltenham. Dave Fevs asked me to clarify, which I did. I saw the same things yesterday. He gave the ball away a few times. Some of his passing came out and went to punch a well, went to claim a ball, almost like that Millwall game last season, if you remember.
It was when he went up with Callas and it dropped to their bloke who scored, yeah.
And generally, I think he's better in the box than Bentley was. I think generally coming for balls, punching balls and all the rest of it. But he's just not quick enough on the ball. You know, he gets hold of the ball and he hits the ball with like this backspin, and we hit these long diagonals to people on the sidelines. I have no idea what we're hoping to do with that, because by the time the ball's in the air, it gives the opposition more than enough time just to... What are they supposed to do there? Either they get a little flick on it, it goes out for a throw-in, or it goes directly out for a throw-in.
Chris Martin, Joe Bryan and Aidan Flint, they were all on that position on the halfway line when it was at home. It was usually in front of the bloody dot, in front of the... Lansdowne, and then it would be a flicked header, but out of control because you're always walking backwards if the ball's coming out to you on that side. Okay,
Dave, just one thing, Bufuma, the time he got hurt, Max O'Leary got hurt, that was because he was slow to come out.
Right.
That was his ball, 100%. He needs to come out, be assertive there. He dithered, and then he was late coming out, and then
he got
hurt in the process. He got clattered.
Yeah. Ian, your thoughts on Max? I mean, I think it's bye-bye Stefan Bajic, who didn't even make the bench. So that's another inspirational signing from abroad there. But, you know, if we are going to delve into the transfer market in the 20-odd days that are left, do you think a goalkeeper would be on Nigel's shopping list?
Yeah, I've said all the way through, I think we need a competition for Max in goal. And I'd be prepared to bet that Max will play against Oxford, not Harvey Wells Richards, on Wednesday. So, we do. He's amongst a number of players we need, assuming that we can get Naismith and McCrory back reasonably quickly. And I mean both of them, not just... I think Naismith is obviously a lot quicker. We don't know. We know he's got a bacterial infection. We don't know what's wrong with McCrory. And how long he's likely to be out.
And it's interesting, we talked about that yesterday, Ian, didn't we? Bacterial infection. That's news that's come out because it was sort of being dusted up as an injury. A bacterial infection could be glandular fever and it can wipe you out for 2 months or more, can't it?
Yeah. And, you know, it's... You don't want more details in one way. You can't discuss the player's medical record, but he can tell you that it's not an injury, it's an illness, which in some ways you think, well, that's okay. It's not a viral illness. So he's not got COVID, for example, or long COVID. So that's good. And, you know, you can't judge him until you see him back. But I'm just saying, looking at our team yesterday, it was the same as last season. Neil made a good point. It was last season's team.
Yeah.
And, yeah. You know, we knew we weren't good enough last season. All right. There were the odd bright game and the odd bright spots and all the rest of it, but we weren't good enough. And if we're going to play like we did yesterday, you know, the first thing I was doing last night, well, I was looking at the other results and thinking, well, blimey, how many teams in that division are worse than us? And which, in other words, which...
Well,
which
I can give you one, QPR. And if...
Yeah, well, I can give you more in one day, but that's not the point I was making. We need to improve our performance from yesterday by about 50%.
Righty, yeah.
Because
we
weren't in the game in the second half.
No.
And
we were chasing. We looked
Preston came a good... I mean, perhaps it was a bad thing that we scored that goal. Perhaps we could have done with getting it a bit later on, so that they sat in more. But
I think, do you know what? I think you're 100%
second
right
half. Second
if
half, they
got that goal. If we'd have got that goal in the 80th minute, we'd have been probably sharper in our defending. But in the second half, it was like Preston were a home side and they were bearing down on us. We couldn't get out of our own half. And as you said,
Pearson couldn't affect the game with his substitutions. His substitutions, if anything, made us worse.
Yeah. Let's talk about the substitutions. Come to you, Mark. Tommy Conway, it's all about what they do in training and stuff like that, as Nigel tells us. Tommy Conway, he came on with, 69 minutes, 20 minutes to go, plus the extended injury time, although we seem to be one of the few games where added time was pretty much par for the course, nothing special. But Tommy Conway, and did he have a chance to impress? Was he unlucky to be left out in your view, Mark?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I haven't seen him in pre-season. I'd like to see him ahead of Harry Cornick, who's, apart from his long throw, didn't really contribute anything. But the big problem was in midfield. We needed to either change perhaps to a back three, and or, you know, we definitely needed an extra body in midfield, because there was no supply to the forwards, and Viner and Dickey had their hands full all the time with wave after wave of attack, because Preston were just strolling through us in the second half, because they completely overwhelmed us. So it was, you know, really we needed a tactical tweak and make it harder for them to get the ball forward, because they were it was crossing the ball into the box. Yeah. We just didn't stop the crosses coming in.
No. Neil, let's talk to you first about the equaliser, the degree of inevitability. Take us through the goal as you saw it.
Well, I'm a bit clouded here, Dave, because obviously I've seen the goal on the highlights now, and the somewhat controversial nature of the ball hitting the arm of the guy in the run-up to it.
Was it Prodjar's arm it hit, wasn't it? Yeah.
I don't know what the name of the player that it sort of hit, but in all honesty, I didn't see it at the time. But the ball's bouncing all around there, and ultimately, we were all sitting up in the Dolmen watching it, and for a 20-minute period, we didn't lay a finger on him, and it was fairly relenting. And then the ball was going to Pring, like I said previously, and he was trying to drive it. He was trying to make something happen, and then they broke on us, and it was not Alamo, because it wasn't Max flying around making save after save after save, but they got in positions that they were disappointed that they didn't convert. Yeah. Now the goal itself is the ball's bouncing around in the area. It's a very smart turn and shot by Will Keane at the end of the day. And my initial thought was, is it one of those that are really good? Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, got you.
Yeah, fine. Carry on.
Oh, okay. It's one of those could have an excellent keeper actually do, but then I've been told that maybe I'm being a bit harsh on Max. It just sort of looked, as he's turning, he's coming through a body of players, isn't he? And from 8 yards or whatever, but it's disappointing, but in all honesty, a fair reflection of the game.
Oh, they're thoroughly deserving. Ian, your take on the goal, I thought, and I know Mark said this to me before we went live, we were too busy appealing, or were we too slow? Because there was plenty of enough players around him, wasn't there? But he turned, seemed to take an age, didn't it?
Yeah, it wasn't great defending, but don't all start waving your arms around and appealing for a handball. Leave it to the referee.
Yeah.
If the referee thinks he's handballed it, he'll blow his whistle. So you play the whistle, especially in a situation when the ball's bobbling around your six or eight yard box. Yeah. I've seen the goal back on Sky on the highlights when I got home last night. And he's got the ball in the corner of the net. It's a good finish. And for me, based on primarily on the second half, Preston looked like they were going to. And should have won the game. If I was a Preston fan, I'd have been going home disappointed we didn't get all 3 points.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk before we look forward to Oxford.
Can I talk about the ball?
Oh, if you goal. Must, Mark, go on.
Yeah, I mean, they had three attempts to score, because the ball was played wide to Potts. He puts it in the area. Tanner heads it out. It's then volleyed low. The guy gets his knee across his body, and Williams deflects it up into the air, and then as it drops, Frokyar handles the ball. I mean, it goes down the side of his body, but his arm's controlling the ball. But then they appeal. I think the appeal by Dickey breaks the concentration of the players. He raises his arm. Holmes flicks it round the corner to Keane, and he controls it well. But I think at the start of the move, Pring's putting no pressure on Potts. He's got to get closer to Potts, stop that first cross coming in. But the big thing is when the ball comes in when the ball hits Frochyar's arm, just play to the whistle. Dickie breaks the concentration, and then I think it's his poor defending.
All right, no, that sounds good. All right, let's talk about some before we look forward to Oxford and Millwall, who I think beat Middlesbrough away yesterday, didn't they? Yes.
Yeah.
Finished up
1-0.
1-0. So, I mean, you all three of you went to the game. Let's talk about e-tickets. Just simple yes no answer. Ian, no problems getting in for you?
No.
Yeah. Mark?
No problems at all.
Same for you, Neil?
Yeah, no problems.
That's something the club did get right. I mean, it was interesting that the clock, we're now told, and we were told this about a week ago, the clock is now meant to keep on running because it was always annoying, wasn't it? That was deemed a thing not to keep running because it put pressure on the referee, yeah? That if the board said, well, we didn't do our clock yesterday, apparently we didn't have time to reprogram it, which I think is... So I'll give them a plus for getting the ticket right on the day, but a clock. Can't reprogram a clock in about 3 or 4 days.
Three or four months?
No, I think, in fairness, that new ruling has only come out within the last 10 days. It has only come out within the last 10 days, this extra added time. And then again, to each of you, what do you think of, you first, Ian, what do you think of this new ruling where we're going to end up in most matches? They're all going to finish after 5 o'clock, aren't they? Yeah.
You threw them somewhere, but I don't know where you threw them.
Yeah.
Good old Lisa. Good old Lisa.
Yeah.
I think, I think it's fair. You go down to watch 90 minutes of football, you don't go down to watch 50 minutes of football, and that's where we were last season. I don't want to watch clubs time waste and players time waste. Professional footballers will cheat as much as they can within the rules. Mm. They just do.
Yeah.
And all clubs do it. We're as bad as anybody else if we're a goal up with 2 or 3 minutes left, but apart from the fact we can't keep hold of the ball and our set pieces are terrible. Yeah. But I'm all for it.
Yeah. Mark, did you expect there to be, I mean, a few people said with Wyman's injury in the first half and then all the substitutions, did you expect there to be, I mean, six? That's pretty, most games it's been five, hasn't it? Yeah. And there was all those substitutions as well. What do you think?
I think you've got to, I mean, too much has been left to the referee's discretion before. I think you've got to have every, if you either do, it's either all or nothing. Like Ian said, you go down and watch 90 minutes of football. I mean, football, it's dragging it into the 21st century with goal line technology was hard enough. Referees, football is still refereed poorly until they bring in sin bins to stop the stupid fouling and punish players properly for persistent fouling. I won't be happy. It's still football that is still way behind in terms of the way that the way that it's refereed. So that good for doing that, but it's too long.
Anything for you to add on that comment, Neil? I mean, it is good. I think, you know, people say that a 90-minute match, the ball's in play for 54, 55, if you're lucky. But, you know, those teams that have got fitness, the number of goals I see the other mob conceded in the 96th yesterday. But, you know, is it a good thing? I mean, the Dolman Stand's going to be emptying later than it normally would, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Well, I think it's going to change a few things down the gate, I have to say, because a lot of the buses tend to go from Bower Ashton about 5 past 5, 10 past 5. If we start getting, you know, 10 minutes of injury time or whatever like that, you're going to see great swathes of people looking at their watches thinking, Christ, I have to get out of Ashton Gate on a hurry up to get these buses back from all these various places, because everything's sort of timed on the basis of the old things. What speeds up the game? I noticed yesterday that multi-ball system.
Multi-ball, it did. It was very good when it was adopted
the throw-ins were just like zoom. People were really having to switch on.
Yeah.
With when the ball went out of play, you know, and people are jogging back. Suddenly, you know, you got this.
Oh yeah.
Four balls up the line and some quick throws going the whole time.
Yeah, no, you got to be on it. All right, chaps, let's look forward very briefly to Oxford. I mean, I'll give you my pennyworth on that. I mean, it is an opportunity to change the team a little, but with the injuries that we've got and stuff like that, I mean, I can't see McCrory or Naismith walking straight back into the side with no preparation other than maybe playing half an hour against Oxford, but we don't seem to have this game in the reserves, and then you come back. But Ian, you first. I mean, Oxford, obvious one. Roberts, Pring.
The people that didn't start, in other words, all the players on the bench, should start against Oxford. So in order to rest, so players can rest and recover in time to play Millwall, where I think we should set up completely differently. Otherwise, right, we're going to get hammered. So I think players that didn't start, so Roberts, for example, you make the point, yes, he comes in for Pring. Arroyo could come in for Dickey. Some of the players will still have to play because we haven't got enough players fit in the squad to make the changes because, once again, and I'll repeat it, on average, we have 4 to 6 players injured at all times for every game of the season, and they're first team squad players.
Yeah.
And we've got 6 out now. Hopefully Scotty will be back for Millwall. I'm hoping Cal Naismith will be back for Millwall. Because even
would
if
you play Scott on Wednesday against Oxford, though, Ian?
No, you definitely wouldn't.
Okay, all right. And you'd start with Sykes, Conway, and Mometi, yeah.
Against Oxford,
yeah.
And I thought Tommy yesterday to me looked like he just looked like an under 18 player playing against a man centre half. He didn't look sharp. He looked like a little bit like, you know, when you've had the flu and you're a bit achy and a bit, he just didn't have the physicality. I mean, the service to our forwards, as I said, is terrible. So I don't think it makes any difference who you play there. But right. You can make those are 3 easy changes to make. So just make them. It gets minutes in the players' legs. It gets them a proper competitive game, not against, you know, the dogging duck or shooting bunny reserves who we were playing in pre-season. I mean, Pearson made a very interesting point. He said, well, when he was asked about how did pre-season go, he said, well, you know, we think it's gone okay, but we'll only really know when we go out there Saturday. Well, if that's a result of our pre-season and we served up that, then we need to radically do it. And the other point I want to make is, this fitness and conditioning camp in Austria, Naismith and McCrory went there. They haven't kicked a ball since they came back.
No, so we can't blame the HPC for that. Let me come to you, Mark, just on Oxford. We'll come back to Millwall in a moment. But Mark, changes, I mean, could he maybe rest Zach and put Dickey up rather than have 2 inexperienced to back 4? Could he put Dickey on the right side? Yeah, and I'm surprised that Harry Leeson, who featured quite well, he didn't even get a squad number because you could have rested Tanner and give him a run out against Oxford, couldn't you, really?
Well, you still can.
Well, Leeson hasn't got a number. Mark, your thoughts on Oxford, what changes?
I think, you could rest Zach, put Arroyo in and play Dickey there. To be quite honest, I mean, it's easy to say we should beat Oxford. They struggled at the end of last season, lost again yesterday to Cambridge. They're a team going backwards, but we know take things at your peril. You know, when we played Lincoln last season, we were awful, I think, in the second round of the League Cup. But yeah, make a lot of changes. Scott's not be ready. He's got a swollen knee. McCrory won't be ready for weeks. Naismith definitely maybe ready. Maybe he's got a half in him. But you could change the front 3. Andy King could play in there. Start with Joe Williams. Definitely play Hayden Roberts. I love to see Hayden Roberts. I wish, you know, it'd be nice to see him come on yesterday. I don't, you know, why he didn't get a few minutes. But yeah, make a few changes. But to me, it's what you want to see, a performance from whoever, whichever 11 starts on Wednesday and really pushes the first team, because that game on Saturday with Millwall beating Middlesbrough, one of the other favourites, Millwall were a team who are punching up again,
we'll
aren't
come
they?
We come on to the fixtures before the international break, but just sticking Neil with yourself. I mean, you know, it's Oxford at home. It's a must win. Not must win in the
context. Only the second game of the season.
No. It's a game, not must win. It's a should win comfortably game. And do you think if the team that's selected put in a performance, yeah, that's decent, yeah, do you think they would be worthy of keeping their places on Saturday against Millwall? And I'm thinking specifically there, if Roberts came in for Craig, because he could play, he could keep it safe and go Max O'Leary in goal, Tanner, Viner, Dickie, Roberts, yeah. And Pring was so poor in some people's eyes, you know, that's the general view, seems to be coming off of Otip, that Pring is probably one whose place is in jeopardy for Millwall if the team do well on Wednesday night. What do you say to that and the Wednesday game?
Right, quite a few questions there.
Yeah, let's
deal with Pring. First of all, Pring will play against Millwall next weekend.
Right.
Okay, because Pring has... One thing, that big physical team. I saw Roberts play up at Cheltenham. He is a very good footballer, David. A very good footballer. But he's 5'9".
Okay.
So I think potentially he could do a job in midfield for us. You know, in a similar type vein to how Naismith is dropped in there as well. Roberts is a very good player. I fully expect him to play against Oxford. The players on the bench, as Ian has said, absolutely valid point. We need minutes from them. I saw Conway at Cheltenham as well, and he just didn't look sharp. And he came on yesterday, and he didn't put himself around at all. Very un-Conway-like 25 minutes from him, really. I mean, we were watching up there, and for some players at the start of the season, they just need some sharpness. Elements of it. So I fully expect the front three to be Mometi, Conway and Sykes. In the midfield, it's a difficult thing in the centre because a lot of the young lads have obviously been, well, OTC, where is he now? I don't know.
Nope.
There's some rumours around him. Kadge has gone off to, Kadge was on the bench at Cheltenham. Now he's gone off to Forest Green. You haven't got a lot of young lads to actually play in the centre,
no,
really alongside it. So I think Knight will stay there. He might rest James and bring King in for James or something like that.
Yeah.
Williams came off the bench, so Williams might need the minutes. Max will stay in goal because I think Max needs sharpness. In midfield. Sorry?
Jed Meerholtz in midfield.
Well, that's a big leap though, isn't it? But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't get hung up, Dave. I wouldn't get hung up with these squad numbers things. I mean, basically, just because they're not in that first team squad doesn't mean they can't actually play.
No. I know that. It was surprising though that Arroyo got a number
they can only name 25, can't they?
Is that right?
26.
So that's similar to the. Oh, I didn't know that. There you go. Shows well. So you can't. I don't know what I'm talking about. So.
Yeah, so you can name 26. Yes. It doesn't mean that they can't play.
All right. Okay, look, what I don't want to do, let's not talk about, because we'll be giving our listeners a review of the Oxford game on Thursday morning. Those of you that are with me today in the studio and those that are listening, we'll do that Thursday morning. We'll talk about the transfer window and possible activity in that one. And we'll look forward to the Millwall game in that one as well on Thursday morning. But I just got to say, you know, there's four games now until the international break and hopefully one Caribou Cup second round tie, assuming we beat Oxford. But God, goodness me. I mean, we said last week, you know, 8 points from the opening five games would be acceptable. Yeah, it would be the 1.7 points a game needed to probably get into the playoffs. But when you look at it, was it Millwall away, Birmingham at home, Hull away, and Swansea away, three out of the next four away from home. Ian, you know, it. I mean, this division, you could win four in a row, but we got to, you've said we got to improve 50%, yeah? So what's your points haul from the next four league games, if I can ask you that?
Well, wouldn't it be nice to get eight? But I, my thoughts are that if you've got, it's about performance for me. If yesterday was a 3-3 thriller, where with both sides with a feast of attacking football and both sides looking bang on it and sharp, I'd have a different view as to the what I saw yesterday, which disappointed me at so many levels. So, I can't see us. If we play like we did yesterday, we'll be lucky to get 4 points. Yeah. If we play like we did yesterday, we know we can play better than that.
Yeah.
Excuse me, because we've seen us play better than that.
Yeah.
So please God, we play a lot better than that. And we pick up the 8 points from those games that I'd like to see us get. I mean, look, we drew that game yesterday. If we went to Millwall and got a win, you'd say, well, what a great start. We played two. We got 4 points. Go on like that.
Of course you would, Ian. 100% of course you would. But this was the opening game. And no easy games. But, you know, throughout the next four away, this was the one that the pressure's on at Millwall at the best of times, right? But you've got to get something up there for it not to be...
Well, Millwall's going to be a very interesting game at a number of levels. Certainly for what they've done to accommodate the fans on a day when there's no trains, that is going to be very difficult getting City fans in and out of that ground. Because what they normally do is they keep the bottom tier empty and they only populate the top tier, and they do that for segregation. What they've done now, apparently, is they've... absolutely divided it in two. So if you imagine the Atio divided right and left, and they've got top and bottom Millwall fans next to City fans in the top tier and the bottom tier. I mean, what could possibly go wrong?
Oh dear! All right.
And there's no coward. What they call the coward's walk. So where you walk down from the tube and go straight into the away end. That apparently that's closed off. So it'd be very interesting to see. Right. What happens? And City have sold nearly all of their tickets. So that'll be interesting at a number of levels.
Yeah. Mark, four games, three of them away in the league. I mean, yesterday's was the one where you wanted to give yourself a kickstart. As Ian said, if we get something at Millwall, what do you think we'll go into the international break with as a points total?
Well, based on yesterday, I think 4 points would be good. But as long as you learn from the mistakes in your first game, you know, you can easily move forward. I was just looking at Luton's first four results from last season, and they only got two draws, right. You know, and went on to finish third. So it doesn't make any difference as long as you improve your levels significantly. That's what we have to do. We have to compete physically. We have to have some intensity. We know it's going to be a hard physical game, but Millwall have improved season on season. They did spend a little bit of money last season. It's not like they were Brassic where they used to be. They are very competitive. And they're one of the teams that should be competing for the playoffs. Yeah. But we've got to improve, like Ian said, that 50% to have a chance.
You're right there, Mark. I mean, as you say, Luton only drew two of their opening four or five.
Four. Yeah.
Only four. I don't know how they did in match five. But yeah, we'll have had one.
They won.
They won their opening game, did they?
No. They lost they won the fifth game. I think they've lost the fourth game to us 2-0 when we had Mark Sykes sent off. We were bossing that game 1-0, 2-0. And they looked awful. You looked at Luton in that game and thought, crikey, they looked like relegation candidates. And how that changed.
All right. Neil, just to finish with yourself, Mark's put a sense of perspective into it. It's a 46-game season. But you know, no easy games at this level, but 3 out of 4 away. Yeah, Saturday against PNE was the one you really wanted to give yourself a kickstart to take the pressure off a little bit, yeah?
Yeah, I think we look rusty, Dave. We look rusty. The players, other than Zach and Dickie, I think every other player could probably look at themselves and say that they could play better. I mean, it was a bizarre comment by Pearson in his presser on Radio Bristol afterwards when he said, well, we just saw what the championship was all about. And I was like, well, we know what the championship is all about. Why? You know, it's like if we're going to go onto a field
comment,
and it just...
That's interesting you picked up on that, Neil, because he sort of made that comment twice. If you look at the BBC website, I haven't heard his BBC interview. I might have heard the City interview. But he said, we know what it's like. And he said it twice in the same interview, you know. And
yeah.
Yeah.
So yesterday was rusty. We can play better. Let's just hope we do. Because ultimately, start of last season, Borough were down the bottom. Coventry were down the bottom, and Luton were down the bottom, yeah. And look how it happened.
West Brom were down the bottom.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, let's see how the season pans out. But it was very, very rusty yesterday, and it was pedestrian, and it was a bit turgid, really, wasn't it?
I like that.
So,
rusty,
but we didn't lose.
Turgid. Yeah, that's good.
But We didn't lose, Dave.
Just interestingly, looking at those clubs you mentioned, am I right in saying that all apart from Coventry changed their manager?
Well, I think Luton didn't change as such. That was forced on them with Nathan Jones,
yeah,
wasn't
but it? But Nathan, they did change their manager for whatever reason. The other two sacked their managers. So Corbyn went in at West Brom. Carrick went in at Borough. So it was 3 out of 4 changed their managers. Now, I'm going to take a really considered look after 10 games.
Fair enough. No, I think Ian, I think you're right.
And we need to be around the top 10 for me after 10 games. If not, and we've got players back. If not, you've got to start looking at it and thinking, could somebody else get a better tune? Sorry, but you know I'm not suggesting anything happens now. I'm just saying that. Take a good look after 10 games because we can't go on performing like we did yesterday.
No. And if yesterday, and if we put in a mediocre, we'd want to see a performance at Millwall next week. You want to see a performance up there. And if it was a performance, maybe we lost 2-1. And don't you just know it, Joe Bryan will probably score against us. You just know that's going to happen. Put your money on him to score now. But look, it's a long, long season. We're right at the start of it. Guys, thanks for your contribution today and everybody who's listened on the Zoom platform. Thanks for joining us as well. And we'll be back with a review of Oxford on Thursday morning. All the best, everybody. Thanks for listening. Cheers, Nate.
Thanks. Bye.
Thanks, Dave.
As happy as a king when the red, red robin comes bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts throbbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red, red robins are bobbing along. When the red, red robin comes bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts throbbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead, get up. Get up, get out of bed, cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red, red robin starts bobbing along.